And now, your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lernis.
Hi, everybody. It's Dean Haglund from the offices of Rational Exuberance. We're sharing computer stories on your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
This is Phil Lernis, and I will save those stories maybe for when we stream our 24-hour end of the Mayan calendar show.
Is that our plan? Well, we're going to talk our way through it?
Well, you know, that was always our plan. We said that we would do a live show.
Yes.
Stream live. We yet to figure out the technology
to
of that.
Do that.
But I think it ought to be a marathon show. I'm inspired by having seen parts of Alex Lefchuk, the host of and producer of Midweek Drive, and
yes,
founder of Siren FM.
Uh-huh.
I saw highlights from his 33 and a third hour marathon that he did back in the 1980s,
oh
1986.
My God. Oh,
I was
my
graduating
God.
From high school, going to college, and he, dashing young man,
really,
back then.
Yes.
Yeah, not that he's not dashing now. He's
I'm
got
not
a,
saying that.
A definite Jim Broadbent thing going on, and I could not give anyone higher praise.
That's not high praise.
Anyway,
that is high praise.
He did 33 and a third hours.
Did he do it in a storefront like a lot of those DJs do? You know, they sleep in a storefront.
It was actually, I think, a studio in a basement of a hospital. It was like a bizarre horror film. But some things never change, and I'll talk about that a little bit later.
Okay, well, that's
where Alex
great.
Is concerned. But
another one of our production meetings on the air.
Hey, it's year six of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
That's right.
Nothing's
changed.
Better to start than with a production meeting about a show 6 months from now.
Exactly.
Don't kid yourself.
It is
going to sneak up on us, and we're going to be wondering
what we should plan stuff.
But we seriously spending all night up at the top of the Eastern Columbia Building watching the end of the world as we know it.
Seeing the black hole align from the universe
from up there. Can we not see the Mayan theater?
We can see the Mayan theater.
I mean, if anywhere is going to be ground zero for the apocalypse,
it's
it would
Mayan
be the Mayan theater.
Maybe right on
we
Hill
should
Street.
Find out how we can break in there and do a streaming broadcast from the Mayan theater.
If they haven't already booked it, we should get on that.
And I said broadcast because
yes.
I'm an old man.
You
and
are.
I meant podcast.
Yes,
of
streaming
course,
podcast.
I did.
Okay, so
we've been gone
we've
for
been
a couple
gone.
Of weeks.
We are exhausted.
The craziest thing is that my bizarre adventures began before leaving.
Did they?
I think I texted you from outside a certain historic building in downtown Los Angeles.
Right.
The day before I left, because here I was, Friday night, you know, a huge thing, to-do list.
Yes.
Of items that needed to get done before my trip.
Right.
Stressed about how I was going to find enough time to get all these things done.
Accomplished.
Phone rings and I answer it. That's rarity number one.
Right.
I never answer.
Why would you
phone.
Do that?
Secondly, it was a number I did not recognize.
Bad news right there.
And I answered it.
Fair.
And it was a producer wondering if I could come in and direct a couple scenes for a Lifetime movie the next morning. I'm sitting there with my to-do list stressed out about how I'm going to get it all done. So naturally I said,
sure.
Why, yes. Yes, I would like to do that. So now I had a totally different thing to stress out about, and the preparations for my trip were a breeze.
Fantastic.
As a result. Okay. It's amazing when you just shift your perspective what, you know.
Everything else you needed.
Yeah.
So you directed a Lifetime.
Two scenes for this Lifetime film. I guess they were under the gun. And you could call them second unit. Directing, certainly what they paid me would indicate that it was second unit directing. However, I was working with the two leads, and those two scenes they wanted me to direct were two locations. One location was four scenes, and it was the four scenes that all directly lead into the climactic scene, the climactic shootout, might I say.
Dear
so
Lord.
The four scenes with the two lead actors...
Which is the tensest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Building the tension for that climax. And that's what I... So I get the job, 10 o'clock at night. I read the script at 12:30 in the morning, get my call sheet at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm at the Herald Examiner building at 7 a.m.
No way.
And I think I told you I'd always wanted to shoot something in there just because I'd never had the chance.
Right. So you're just up the street in a historic building in downtown Los Angeles.
And... it's a dive.
It's a dive. I'm not going to tell you.
They've kept the lobby restored,
gorgeous.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah, but everything else is deteriorating.
Deteriorating.
But did you go up the, you know what's fascinating?
I should have made a documentary about asbestos poisoning.
Yes, there's an asbestos problem in the back room. But that brass handrail going up to the third story, you'll notice is dented. That's where William Randolph Hearst stood with a baseball bat, smashing it against the brass railing to quiet down the strikers that were about to burn down the whole Herald Examiner building in a riotous strike in the 30s, saying full on that we are in this together. And he was single-handedly stood at the top of the stairs and stopped a disastrous riot strike.
Flash forward 80-something years, and don't kid yourself, a certain... Phil Lernis is borrowing lines wholesale from that speech, rallying the second unit troops for two scenes on a Lifetime movie called Girl on the Edge.
With a baseball bat going,
it was
gentlemen.
Fun. It was fun also. I was working with young actors. I mean, uh-huh. Really young actors.
12. You know, 12
Taylor 15. Spreitler is a teenager.
Wow.
Who's the girl in Girl on the Edge.
Ah, I see.
And I guess really popular for several years on Days of Our Lives. In fact, I asked her at one point, I think the main character's 15 or 16-year-old high school pregnant girl.
Right.
I was shocked to find out that Lily wasn't the lead in it. But Taylor Spreitler was playing the lead. And I asked her, is this your first time playing a teenage high school pregnant girl? She said, no. Did it for several seasons on Days of Our Lives, or for hundreds of episodes of Days on of Our Lives. She also is in an ABC Family show, plays the daughter of Melissa Joan Hart and Joey somebody. Joey, the name of the show is Melissa and Joey.
I see.
I should know.
I'm not even going to bother going on IMDb.
Another name from somebody who was big in family sitcoms, and I just don't know. But so this young girl already has this huge track record. Already, you know, professional actress, and was just such a joy. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And
that was your Friday, and so then
it was Saturday. It was the day before I.
Then you flew Sunday to...
Flew Sunday. Oh, went to a birthday party at night and then got on a plane the next day.
Of course, because that's how you go. You are 24-hour Mr. Lairness. You do not stop. You give and you give.
And then I give some more. Right. But that's the thing is, you know, I'm capable of doing this because Phil Lairness is not one person.
No. He is seven.
Phil Lernis is many of us. He's you. He's Taylor Spreitler.
He's the sheriff.
The second unit crew.
He's Ocho Cinco.
All working together to make the best Phil Lernis we possibly can. And I understood that when I agreed to accept the mantle of Phil Lernis.
Right. It's not just a person.
So where were you?
I was in Fredericksburg, Texas, Johnson City, Texas, Austin, Texas.
Before that, I think you went to Pennsylvania.
I was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where I...
What was the reasoning behind the Pennsylvania trip?
Well, there was a fantastic Van Gogh exhibit at the Museum of Art in Philadelphia, where it, for once, did not focus on his madness, but in fact focused on his nature, on his work as a naturalist and painting.
But focused on his culinary skills.
I don't think he had culinary skin. I think he ate his paint, which is probably why he went mad, because a lot of the chemicals back then.
Oh, right.
You know, the green was actually rat poison, and the orange had cadmium.
I told you this before. There was a self-portrait at the Norton Simon.
Yep.
The green in this self-portrait, it is one of my very favorite paintings I've ever seen. I
mean, and that's the technological advance of Impressionism. Why all those colors exploded was they started bringing chemicals into paints, and they were in the art shop. So suddenly all these artists picked up these tubes of paints for the first time that were bright, bright colors. Anyway, so we saw that exhibit. It was fascinating. There weren't any self-portraits. It was mostly plants and scenic landscapes.
Oh, so it was all his landscapes.
Yes. And,
sunflowers?
There was one sunflower at the very beginning, just to get that out of the way, and then you get into like his grass work and his land, and he did this thing for his nephew, which was blossoming cherry blossoms on four or five branches on a blue background. Couldn't be more peaceful, more Japanese. Nothing to indicate he's crazy. You know, like how many of these Van Gogh.
Well, that's interesting because unless I'm mistaken, he's always been. I mean, he's famous, so he's quote unquote popular all around the world, but. But I've always felt that he was very influential in Japanese art.
Right. Movement. He actually had Japanese prints, and they actually showed a bit of, you know, some of the prints that he had in his collection when he died that he had purchased himself that influenced his work. So you can see.
Oh, like, it influenced him, and he influenced them.
That's right.
Much like the spaghetti westerns. So he is the spaghetti western of Impressionist painting.
Post-Impressionism, like technically. I don't know if I will ever see that in the art book anywhere, but I'll hear it here. So we did that, and then We jogged.
Did you see
10
paintings
miles?
That you'd never seen before?
Yes.
There and did some. You and did you learn anything? Did you develop an appreciation for him that you had not had previously?
Yes, absolutely. There was I didn't realize the scope, because a lot of those pieces aren't shown, or they're kept in private collections or galleries. Mm-hmm. So they were accumulated from around the world in a joint venture with the Museum of Art in Ottawa, and the Philadelphia Museum now is going to tour around to the other museums that they've taken that art from. So it's a really cool show, and it was quite packed. And loved the museum. And of course, then we had to do just like Sylvester Stallone and run up the steps and pose like he did in Rocky.
Was that part of the... Did you get married there? A lot of people get married in front of the Rocky statue.
They do not.
Yeah, they do.
Really?
Yeah, no, apparently that's a thing.
The statue now is off to the side. They put it. They've taken it off the steps, and it's down beside the steps on the ground level. And so people just sort of line up and get their picture taken in front of it.
Right around Rocky V, they said, you know what, this doesn't need to be so prominently displayed right. anymore.
Right. Oh, we shouldn't really be
proud
of this.
Was that part of your 10-mile run?
That was part of our 10-mile run. We did 10 miles along the river and then came back and ran up the stairs and did the whole thing. At mile 8, we ran up the stairs, no less.
Did you have on your earbuds the looped Gonna Fly Now?
No, I just sang it out loud as I ran. Gonna fly now! As
like you would be the only one, even that day, doing that.
Exactly. Da, 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 da. Yeah,
nothing has to be more responsible for the declining population of Pennsylvania than Pennsylvania as a whole. I don't even know if the population is declining.
There was actually a live band playing outside there because it was some sort of rally, 5K walk and run that we had to scoot around. For what? Oh yeah, March of Dimes going on, so that we had to jog around that and find our 10-mile path up and down the river there.
I got trapped in a parade to promote research for spinal cord injuries near the palace. I thought the Jubilee had started, and it was kind of interesting my reaction to going against that particular flow because I needed to get somewhere, and as I'm dodging people in wheelchairs and my frustration with it, exactly, getting booed. And meanwhile, all week long, I'd for the first time in my life, I'd been realizing, boy, this whole tube situation really sucks for people who are disabled.
I know two or three people who either in wheelchairs or in the scooters, and the mind the gap, the stairwell situation on
the stairwell, it's like unbelievable.
There is no sense for any alternative.
There's no help
challenge.
At all. And so many buildings are utterly without lifts.
Yes, in the historic...
And you notice that when you're carrying all your camera gear all over the United Kingdom, which we'll talk about in a little while.
Fantastic.
So you came back from Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And then...
Turned around.
You drove right to Texas.
No.
Didn't you? Oh, you didn't?
No, I rented. I had to fly to Austin, then rented a car and drove all around.
So you didn't bring the girls?
The girls did not. They stayed here, yes. The girls being the Dobermans, as you
exactly yes, the Dobermans,
as we say, and then from there it was an oil painting workshop with Kevin Bielfuss, the famous portrait artist from Chicago, who was down in Fredericksburg. It was a 1 week intensive in a room with him, 15 other artists, and a model.
And where did this take place?
In Fredericksburg, part of the Fredericksburg Art School.
Okay.
And it was intense, 9 a.m. every day, painted till 4 or 5 in the afternoon, maybe half an hour for lunch. And
during which time you simply ate your paints.
I ate my paints.
You were inspired.
I was inspired by the Van Gogh exhibit. I thought cadmium is a delicious treat. And then...
you should get the cadmium in the UK where they use the better chocolate. Ah, see what I did?
See? Cadmium milk chocolate. That's funny. And so, some portraits went up. I tweeted my favorite, of course. That went out and...
That was extraordinary.
Yeah, did you like that one?
Yeah, now where can people see this? Well, where did
right
you upload
over,
it?
Right over there.
Come on by.
Come on by the place. You can see it just over there drying.
Definitely come before the end of the Mayan calendar. We'll be giving it away. We'll be burning it on December 21st at the Mayan Theater.
Just the frame, though. I'm keeping the painting. You could see it... I guess I'm going to put it up on my website and... up in the Facebook any
so
day now.
So definitely a different direction look. For you.
Yes. I've not done portraits or figures really a lot.
And were you inspired in any way directly by anything you'd seen the previous week?
Not directly, because we saw mostly landscapes and stuff like that, and we thought we were going to go out and do landscapes. But in fact, it was the most rain the West Hills of Texas had received in 5.5 years. There was rainstorms every day. We were trapped in a flash flood situation. I'll be putting pictures up on Facebook of me pulling a log off the main road in 2 feet of rushing water.
You are the mighty Thor.
I am the mighty Thor. That we had to traverse flooded roads to get back to our cabin where we were staying on the Benigni Sculpture Ranch.
And did you, so you were staying?
I was staying in Johnson City at the Benigni Sculpture Ranch.
And how is he?
Benigni? He's very good.
Excellent.
Lost weight. He's more prolific than ever. His new works are spectacular. And yes, he's putting out more art than he ever has in centuries. Not that
fantastic.
It's centuries.
And he's planning on staying put?
No, he's bought a second place, so he's going to split his time between Texas. And it turns out that the summers in Texas are very hard for acrylic paint to dry in time. So he's looking for a summer studio where the paints can dry faster and he doesn't have to take so long between. That's how prolific he is. So he's going climate to look for a different climate.
So where would one, what kind of climate?
No, something drier and maybe a bit cooler. So he's looking at Northern California, perhaps the interior of Oregon, in the rain shadow there, in the Rocky Mountains, something.
Interesting.
He's also going around Colorado and New Mexico to see some drier areas that may be cooler in the higher elevations. Fascinating, isn't it?
It is.
You wouldn't think that's a problem, that heat affects drying times of oils and acrylics.
However, I do know, I don't know to what degree this matters, but I do know, having been there with you, that the terrain and the weather of that Johnson City area is, of the whole West Hills area, is different than much of the state.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really surprising. They have arid times of drought, but boy, did that go away this time, man. Hmm. There was like downbursts.
Now, this will, of course, lead to an off-air production meeting, but did you see our friend Alex Jones while you were there?
Yeah, you know, I called him twice. He didn't return my call, and my plane arrived late for the day I was planning to go to the studio, the one day it was open. So the rest of the time, I did not have a chance to see him.
Did you tell Lyle Scozzi about this?
I'm sure he's hearing it right now.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Huzzah. So,
how was London?
I have trip notes.
Okay.
What an itinerary. Who booked my itinerary?
You did.
Mark Bennett did.
Oh, really. Well, see, that's a mistake right there.
That
guy travels really fast.
Oh, my goodness. First of all, let me say this about jet lag. If I may. You know that it's going to be bad when you are on a plane flight and you have watched 2 movies... and had a full meal and a nap, and you still have 6 hours left.
Oh, my God. You know that you're going to
really be feeling this That's for days afterwards.
Did you not have melatonin with you? Do you not take the old sleep corrector known as melatonin?
No, but I paint with it. No. No, I just don't know. I do find going there. And I don't know if this is the way that it's supposed to work, but for me, jet lag is always coming back to
Los Angeles. Yeah. It's sort of going east is harder than, or going west. No, wait.
For me, I always heard that going east was harder.
Going west is easier.
But going west for me is always the hard one.
Really?
I'm counterintuitive in that way. And also, I think it has something to do with the unique nature of Los Angeles weather and everything. But it was. So, you know, I flew all night to get to London and did something very smart, checked into a hotel by the airport.
Ah, the
Hilton. Very smart, not even knowing when I booked the flight and the hotel that the average times to get through border check in the UK is up to 3 hours. So tag that on to what is already a fairly long flight. And so it was late afternoon, early evening by the time I get to the hotel.
Right.
And so that way it's just...
You're just falling.
Good night, I'll see you in the morning.
Yeah.
And...
Did you stay at that little Japanese hotel in Heathrow? That one where it's like $60?
No, I got out of Heathrow. I got out of Heathrow. Went to the... In fact, I knew I'd made the right choice when I walked into the hotel and the song playing was a Paul Weller song, my favorite. So I knew that I'd made the right choice. And how beautiful that the last song, so that was the first song I heard upon arriving in the UK. Last song I heard upon leaving the UK was Grace on Jones. The Virgin Atlantic flight right before they turned off the system and prepare for takeoff. Another Paul Weller song.
Look at
his new
that.
Album, Sonic Kicks. His number one debuting album, Sonic Kicks. So perfect. I've bookended it.
You bookended a Paul Weller experience. Now the rest of it went to hell, I imagine.
Well, the next day, we had a screening at Goldsmiths College, University of London, Department of Psychology.
I saw the tweets.
But before going there, I stopped off at the Apollo Piccadilly Cinemas.
Yes.
In Piccadilly, the flagship theater for Sci-Fi London, which Sci-Fi was beginning London. That night.
Right.
Just to say hello
to Louis
Savvy and to deliver a gift for him.
Oh.
Because on the prior week's midweek drive, the Siren FM show, on which I am a regular LA correspondent.
Yes.
Louis had been interviewed.
Uh-huh.
And I was listening to the show, you see.
Very good.
And they asked Louis, if Phil's listening, do you have any requests for him? And he said, yes, See's Candies, Nuts, and Chews. And he could not believe that, first of all, that
you
I brought
it,
and secondly, that I made a special trip just to see him to drop this off.
Well, what's so handy is it's right at the airport. The See's Candy stall is at the United Terminal and at the International Terminal.
Yeah, but not in the Virgin Atlantic.
Not Virgin,
no,
yeah,
no.
Two. It's right by Duty Free, isn't it?
No.
You didn't see it?
I
so where did you
it.
Where'd
no.
you have to go?
You know, they have their own terminal, and by the way, it's fantastic. I mean,
I thought
it took me 7 minutes to get through baggage check and security all the way to the gate. 7 minutes.
It's really beautiful. See, that's good.
So that took a little bit of the bite out of the 3-hour border check in the UK. I read a book in the border check line.
Oh, my gosh.
But really, I had to get him the nuts and chews because, as we've talked about before, the candy and the chocolates especially are so much better in the UK than here. So whenever anybody has
a request for candy, chocolate
an American candy request, I've got to do my bit just to keep our exports up.
I know. So otherwise, there's such a trade deficit that it's insane.
He was introduced to this candy by John Landis, director of American Werewolf in London and Trading Places. John Landis has and apparently continues to be a shadowy reflection upon my development and my career.
Oh, my God.
To wit, he personally introduced me and my thesis film at UCLA.
Right, at UCLA. I remember you telling that.
He introduced to Louis, without me knowing it, Nuts and Chews. I continued the tradition.
Yes.
On the set of Girl on the Edge, I killed an actor with a helicopter.
too soon. Sad day.
So this Goldsmith screening, beautiful. Goldsmith is quite a beautiful location. Impossible to get to. They don't really want you getting there on public transportation.
No, clearly.
None of the tubes
stop
really
near,
go near
anywhere
there.
At the University of London.
So I took a tube stop to Elephant and Castle.
Yes, close.
I've got no point except that I just really like saying Elephant and Castle.
There's a bar named after that.
And there is the most horrendous roundabout I have ever seen in any city, outside the Elephant and Castle stuff. It may not be the most horrendous one anywhere in the world, but it was the most horrendous one I've ever seen.
Right.
And certainly the most horrendous one I was running through traffic again and again while dragging my two bags with me.
Oh, fantastic.
Trying to find a bus that would take me down the road to Goldsmiths. I knew which direction I was going. I knew where it was as the crow flew.
Right.
Could not figure out for the life of me any buses, and every bus that I was told didn't exist, was wrong, whatever.
Take a cab.
Finally, you say that, but that would, you know, until I have to be there, that takes kind of the sporting. Mark Bennett doesn't realize this either. That's just not sporting.
I see. So you'd take to London as a sport.
So I flagged down a National Express coach, stood in front of it, flagged it down.
Oh, my God.
I said, look, I am not from these parts. I'm trying to get to Goldsmith College. People are telling me what buses to take. They don't exist. They're going in the wrong direction. I know that this is, I just know you're going past there. I'm wondering, do you have any idea what route I'm supposed to take? And the driver listens to me, says, where are you from? And I say, Los Angeles. I've always wanted to talk to someone from Los Angeles. He jumps down, opens up the bottom, puts my luggage in, brings me up. I get a free ride on the National Express coach all the way down to Goldsmiths, where they make another unscheduled stop right at the gate to the college.
Anybody else on the bus?
Oh, yeah, it's packed.
And then no one's upset that they're detouring for this guy who wants to chat Los Angeles.
I did look at them when I got on board the bus and explained that it was a show business emergency.
Always works. Show business emergency.
So that was a little bit of the adventure. Get there to Goldsmiths. My host is Professor Chris French, who is a delightful man. And I find out when I'm there, a really big deal. A television expert, a television presenter extraordinaire on all matters skeptical, and an author, and the head of this psychology program. So we have this screening in their beautiful state-of-the-art theater that has the sound go out halfway through the film.
Oh, no.
And I do just enough to make sure that it's not our disc, and I realize that it isn't, because I've heard that I've now gone back to where the audio was working, so the house system has just cracked out. So I let Professor Chris worry about it, and I did kind of a solid 20 minutes of stand-up.
No.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
We lip-sync a little improv. What happens here is Dean is
doing,
now...
I was doing a... Yeah, I was... Dr. Somebody Rocha came up and was my arms, and then... so that was delightful. But what a spirited... If we can use that word.
Uh-oh.
Yes, exactly. Oh, discussion.
Oh, no.
Afterwards.
What?
I had about a third of the people waving fists in my face in anger.
What? Why? Oh, my gosh.
A third wanting to take my cause and go to battle on my behalf, though I didn't really necessarily see the need for battle in any of this, and that also both...
Inspired
some people and made enraged. Other people even the more angry.
Right, yeah.
A couple things that came up that really surprised me.
You missed one third, though. What?
They were...
Non-complacent.
No, but they had seen the film and maybe...
Enjoyed it?
Had questions, were interested, what have you. But like my favorite comment was by one person who had said, after having this discussion, you know... I now have a totally different relationship to the movie you just made after listening to you discuss it than I did from watching it.
Right.
So isn't that a problem with the film? And I said, I don't know if there's ever a problem. You know, I mean, it's these discussions are important.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's why we
make
do these.
Story too. You know? Yeah.
And this is why, isn't it, that we talk about things we read and things we see and things we hear? Because our perspective will shift. Because we're taking in more information than we're necessarily aware of in the moment.
So
we do that initial discernment of how we feel, how we think about something. But a movie is planting seeds, as any work is planting seeds, and they can grow in different directions depending on how they're watered.
I guess. But I guess his point is taken that the movie stands alone and that the discussion is secondary, not ancillary. And yet
we've taken this point that I'm not sure that is. If the movie is to promote discussion, then perhaps the movie itself is secondary.
Right.
The discussion itself is what's important. And I think that that's true fundamentally with most works. If they are to enrich this experience called life, if they are going to nourish us in some ways, it's got to be in part at least with, you know... what we do with that work once it's no longer in front of us.
Right.
How does it resonate? How do we... And look, we've all seen films that we thought were bad. We've all seen shows that we thought were bad or paintings that we didn't like or music. And we've changed our feelings about it as we grew, as we matured, or as we came to it on a day when we were in a different mood.
Right, and saw it again.
Or when we've read someone's perspective on it.
Right.
And, oh, that answers some questions.
Exactly.
For me. So I think, you know, this conversation is really important.
Okay.
Now, the criticisms, the two that really were...
the fist shakers.
Fascinating. Chris French himself asked me the question, isn't it dangerous to let people share their stories when you know that what they're expressing... can lead to harmful ramifications. That one, when you know that they're wrong, This came up again and again. What's my responsibility as a filmmaker in terms of letting these people have free rein to express things that are wrong?
Did anybody express anything wrong?
Well, this is according to them. Huh. And it sets up an interesting position for me, both as a filmmaker and as a spokesperson for the film.
Right.
Which is, if I engage in this conversation of, well, what is it that you think they said that was wrong? And if I say, well, that's your truth, that's, you know, am I not then trying to tell them that they're wrong?
Right.
Right? Am I now not doing with them what they want me to do with someone else?
Right.
And so what I found myself very comfortably, getting at was, first of all, it's a documentary. And what I was documenting was certainly not a movie about me going around the world telling people they're wrong.
Yes.
That's not what I was
talking about. I'm glad we didn't do that documentary.
I've seen those documentaries.
That's right. I believe there's a whole series called
Bill Maher made a documentary about that, right? Yeah. And so the question becomes then, what are we documenting? Now, but as to this question of, is it dangerous?
Right.
I would not be so presumptuous to say that it is never dangerous to allow people a platform.
Right.
I can't argue that. I mean, that seems... I mean, maybe it's not ever dangerous. I don't know. But because I don't know, it would be presumptuous of me to say that it's never dangerous.
Right.
What I do know from my own history and from this country's history, and what I said again and again that night, was it is always dangerous to repress, to suppress, to silence what anyone has to say.
Yeah.
Yes, speech can be filled with hate, and speech can be incendiary, and speech can be filled with all manner of ugliness. And we might desire far more thoughtful speech and a much more elevated conversation. We're not going to get there by silencing or repressing speech.
Right.
And so that was the point of view that I came from in this. And I found myself speaking a great deal about my fear that, in this country, we tend towards a sort of bullying attitude.
Right.
And the importance of standing beside someone who finds themselves very alone in what they're saying.
And surely that cogent point, then the fists came down and the
somewhat, not initially. By the time we were in the pub afterwards and a lot of fists were still, then they realized that I was walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Right.
And it did. You know, friendships were formed. And it wasn't hard because their anger in this was not anger towards me. I mean, their reaction was so big that this had very little to do with me. I was simply the person on the receiving end of it.
Right.
And hopefully, could plant some seeds in that regard. Huh. But it was a little bit of a challenge. And I must say that it was incredibly heartwarming, although I did not let any of the people who were wanting to dive in to argue on my behalf. Right. I did not let them have the opportunity to do that because I did not see an argument.
Right.
But at the end, this woman raised her hand, and it turned out to be Katrin Sawyers.
Oh, yeah.
Our loyal listener.
Yeah,
who she came announced to the show from the very beginning that she listens to our show every week.
Uh-huh.
That she saw the film when it first premiered
in London.
And come back again to see this. And she wanted everyone there to know that by listening to the show every week, that I inspire her all the time to become a better human being.
Aww.
And that, and Chris French at that moment, both because of the tone that it set and because of the fact that I was getting a little bit choked up at that, said that's a perfect time to stop.
Aww.
And so what a beautiful thing, you know?
That's
and so again,
lovely.
This was a very challenging discussion, mm-hmm. and at the same time, the beauty that can emerge from those challenges.
That's
very rewarding.
Fantastic. And were the rest of the screenings as rewarding as that?
Well, that night, I stayed with Professor Chris French and his family in Greenwich, and I'd never been to Greenwich before.
You've never been to the museum there?
I'd never been. And
you saw the green laser down the tent?
The green laser,
yes,
down the zero meridian.
Million.
And you can feel the power of that area.
I know. Isn't that pretty amazing?
I mean, this is where time began.
This is where we figured out how we're jet-lagged, how we go through time zones. And there was a big challenge. It was 25,000 pounds who could ever figure out how to get a clock on a boat. Because up till that time, they had pendulums. to keep time. But as the boat rocked, the pendulum would hit against the side. So keeping time on a ship was a very difficult thing, particularly when needed for circumnavigating the globe. Once we went global, it was much harder to figure out, because you needed time to figure out longitude and latitude. Oh my gosh, it's such, that museum there is such a exciting journey into scientific discovery. It's pretty cool.
It's and like I said, you really feel the power of it, because, you know, I mean, that's power. I mean, dictating how generations in the future around the world will keep track of time
and travel.
Will measure their very lives.
Yes,
that's exactly. Power.
That's power. And also, probably what you're feeling too is behind there was the mass graves during the bubonic plague, where they threw most of the bodies in the parkland right behind there.
You just described my Sunday. I was laying all day yesterday in a mass bubonic plague grave of my own devising. What just happened?
I don't know.
So the next day I went to Lincoln.
Yes.
Home of the University of Lincoln.
Yes.
Now, University of Lincoln is a brand new facility.
Oh.
I think 99 it was made. I asked him, how could Lincoln, which, you know, is not a huge city, but it's a big city. The Lincoln Cathedral is there.
Very
I visited
historic.
That. And it's many, many famous personages come from Lincoln. Jim Broadbent.
No, look at that.
Margaret Thatcher, who was schoolmates with him. And I was told that actually Lincoln was a chosen site for the nation's second university.
Yeah.
And Lincoln apparently decided, we don't really need university. So it went to Cambridge instead. They figured, we'll take it the next time around.
Right.
The next time around was the 1990s.
Right. There's Eton, Cambridge, Oxford.
So it's not this impressive kind of campus in that way, because so much of the UK is so impressive because of its history
and
its
history.
But it is impressive in terms of facilities, modern facilities, and also how many campuses have a train running straight through it and a river running straight through it?
Very few.
You've got boats and trains, or do you got bridges going over boats and trains on your campus?
Well, that is fun.
That is kind of fun.
You kind of know your public transit's taken care of.
And visiting the Siren FM studio.
Yes.
How much fun was this?
Where I was.
You surprised me.
I did, didn't
when
I?
Mystery voice.
I was the mystery voice. They planned that about a week in advance. I wasn't to tell you.
Someone thought you were Jean Bruce Scott, which I thought was interesting, the woman who starred in the 80s series Airwolf.
Yes. And you know what? That's the third time I've been mistaken for her. That's the weird thing.
You're beginning to sign for her now.
I am. All those Airwolf conventions I go to.
So that was fun. And, Alex, you know when you listen to the show that he's very gifted at what he does.
Yes.
He's a pro's pro, and having seen those early recordings, it's more than just being really professional and accomplished at it. He's got an innate gift towards this kind of show.
Now tell me though, everybody has a picture when they listen to radio. You have a picture in your head, much like everybody's surprised when they come to be a guest on our show.
Yes.
They had their picture in their head of us in easy chairs and
smoking jackets.
Exactly. Sitting in well lit with a fireplace crackling and two
that
Dobermans.
That is exactly
right?
What Alex does.
Is that right? Is that what it, because that's the picture I have. You know, he's got his female host maybe.
With all the ladies around.
All the ladies
and
around
this
him.
Is the thing. You know, I always say that I've been serving the feminine since 1968. And yes. Alex is surrounded by these extraordinary, remarkable young women. I mean, on one show, or on the two shows that I did, because I did the morning edition the next day,
I see.
Which was a great deal of fun as well. But, I got to finally meet these young women who I'd spoken with before, Hannah O'Brien,
yeah.
Tiffany Freeman, Katie Grimason, who's the treasurer of Birmingham, by the way. I went to Birmingham later in the trip, and all anyone could talk about was, Katie Grimason. Natalie Tuck, Philippa Blackmore, and Caroline Edwards, this woman who's doing a doctoral thesis, I believe it is, in science fiction literature, who was totally groovy. And so he's surrounded by these really interesting, talented ladies, a couple of whom I think will probably pursue broadcasting and communications as a career. And to see this show that he did 25 years ago, 86, is that 25 years? 26 years ago, it's no different. He had all these extraordinarily interesting women in there. Yeah. So, you know...
he's found a formula and he's sticking to it.
Well, what I would say is that, you know, we constantly talk about on this show the lack of a voice for women in the media. Mm-hmm. And I was at a restaurant with Mark Bennett at a Chinese restaurant.
Okay.
And there was this couple of Indian descent having a conversation at the table next to us about the Bechdel test.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the judging the movies Jews, through how many female characters they had and whether they ever have a conversation. And, you know, they were getting very spirited in their conversation
and
about
picking
it.
Out movies that failed or succeeded the Bechdel test.
So Alex is someone who has constantly sought to bring
more female voices.
Female voices into the medium. So that was exciting.
Is he in an armchair with a smoking jacket? Because he's so laid back.
He's like a one-man show. He's running entirely the bridge of the Enterprise.
Oh, right. So he has
he's helmsman, he's navigator, he's in the captain's seat. He's also doing planet reading.
I see.
So it's very impressive. And the rest of us are just sitting with a microphone waiting to be glib.
On a stool.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So we had a screening of Truth Is Out There. Sparsely attended. Fun, though, and because it was sparsely attended, I decided, you know, we can have a Q&A about this afterwards, but you can all come up to me afterwards and ask the questions. What if I show you something that no audience has ever seen, which is a certain vampire short?
No, you didn't.
So I showed them Appearances.
Oh.
And it played very well.
Did it?
Yeah, and Simon, the young actor who's the lead in this...
Yeah.
He impressed the hell not only out of the audience, but the faculty.
Really?
That was there in the different disciplines, the film and television disciplines.
Really?
Very. And, of course, your cameo delighted people.
Can it not be
delightful? So that was good fun.
That's good fun.
I spent Thursday after doing the morning edition of the Midweek Drive, went to the Lincoln Cathedral.
Ah, yes.
And this place is filled with some very interesting mystery.
Really?
And we're not going to have time on this show. So I think next week I will reveal the mystery of the Lincoln Cathedral, because this will play an important part, or at least a part, in Truth Is Out There, Ancient Mystery.
Ah, fantastic.
Yes.
Okay,
I met later in the trip and interviewed one of the people who is on the cutting edge of that particular mystery.
Really?
And didn't even talk to him about it because I wasn't aware at the time when I talked to him.
Well, you know, I'm listening to next week's show.
Oh, it's going to be good.
Yes.
No, you're going to love this.
I'm going to love
this.
This
is, it involves...
Dare I go and research some of that before the show?
Tell you about it. Okay. I'll tell you about it, because I've already got all the footage and everything. So,
really?
Yeah.
Well. No, I'll look it up. Don't kid yourself.
You got nothing to do.
Yeah, that's right.
So then from there, I went to Birmingham, had the third and final screening of Truth Is Out There for the Birmingham UFO group.
Right.
I'm going to pronounce... I never learned how to pronounce his last name, but Dave Hodrian, I think, is his last name. He writes for Paranormal Magazine.
Yeah.
And just a great guy. His dad, Chris, was there. He was fantastic. Sent me a long email following the screening that I've yet to be able to address, but I will. But these are just wonderful people, and... again, it was fascinating because it was every bit as passionate as the Goldsmiths screening, and indeed also equally as divisive, just in different ways.
Is that right?
It's fascinating.
Oh,
yeah.
Well. Because this was the group that also sought this film out on their own accord. We didn't approach them. So this is somehow the ripples in the pond have reached all the way to Birmingham UFO Group, and they took it upon themselves to create the screening. So how well attended was it? How big is the UFO group in itself?
I don't know. I mean, I think they said that it was on the... It seemed like a good turnout.
Yeah.
I was pleased with the turnout. I think from their standpoint, it was on the smaller side of turnouts because they said usually, you know, the people that they bring in are people who are on their television over there.
People dealing with this there. Yeah.
And also, you know, a movie, it doesn't deal strictly... with just UFOs.
That's true.
With many other
it's got other phenomena.
Well. And what I did love, though, was, and I don't know if I should give this away, but one young man, a veteran, military veteran, named Chris, asked me whether or not someone in our film had been drinking at a certain point in the movie. And he's the only person ever to see the movie and to nail it. He said, it's obvious. The person's drunk. And he was right, but no one has ever noticed it.
It was me, wasn't it? I was drunk.
No, it's not. No. No, but we did get the question. In that one scene, was Dean sober?
I get that. What?
From then on, man, it was all about shooting interviews for The Truth Is Out There.
Yes.
Ancient Mysteries.
And Hours
Truth
of Footage.
Is Out There. Business as usual. I returned to returned to London early on Friday to meet Mark Bennett. We went and interviewed Chris Hyslop, a homeopathic practitioner, about colloidal silver.
Yes.
About Beck's device and about business as usual.
Fantastic.
Then I did an interview promoting your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour and The Truth Is Out There with Dave Pickering, a brilliant young man who hosts a show called Getting Better Acquainted. And it's just an hour chat with people that come into his sphere of influence.
Radio, podcast, what is this?
It's a podcast.
Yeah.
And it was a fantastic conversation for an hour. It was a lot of fun.
Love it.
From there then, Mark and I hightailed it to Shoreditch in eastern London.
Excellent.
Boy, that area is hip.
Isn't it?
Now.
Yeah.
And we had a great view. It was kind of the Shoreditch version of the Eastern Columbia building. And We interviewed Layla Randall Condi, who spoke about the use of symbols in the modern world. My favorite thing to come out of that conversation was this idea of how we get indoctrinated through rituals that borrow upon
ancient
old rituals. And the one she hit us with was going through security at the airport. You take off your shoes. You go through the archway. What do you do now? You hold up your hands and you praise the
machine. Yes.
Praise the machine that keeps us safe.
Oh my gosh.
We're going to church.
Isn't that wild, eh?
Isn't that, and it's all an act of faith, too.
That's right. Wow.
So I love that.
That is good.
Andy Gough, I think it's G-O-U-G-H. Would you pronounce that go or
no?
Gough?
I mean, Goff.
Goff.
I would say
Andy Gough, great guy who talked about a lot of ancient wisdom stuff. He was our host that evening. Just a lovely man and had so much fun talking to him. But one of the coolest things was he talked about the importance of bees, not only biologically and in our current age where there's much fear about the loss of tons of bees, but also in terms of our tradition of symbolism and throughout history, how much hermetic knowledge, if we can call it that, surrounds bees.
Really?
It was fascinating. Wow. Fascinating stuff.
Because true, honey is the only food that doesn't spoil. They found honey in the Egyptian pyramids and it was still good.
He talked about this.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's really phenomenal.
How about the clerical hats that in the Catholic Church that are designed to be beehives.
Oh.
I mean, so much great stuff.
Wow.
So much. And then finally that night, interviewed a healer, Dawn Brahmadat, who is this beautiful woman who just dropped into this ancient, powerful knowledge, talking about the emergence of the Mary Magdalene in our contemporary age. And what I loved was Mark Bennett, who set this up, said, you know, I don't know what she's really going to say. If we don't think we need to interview her, we don't need to interview her. She has changed Mark Bennett's life.
They have
now met again. She has taken it upon herself to heal Mark Bennett.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
that
I
is
love
awesome.
That. You always know something big is going to happen when someone says, we don't really need to do this one. Maybe we should hightail it.
Yeah, exactly. We could cut out early.
Oh, it's getting late, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my life changed.
So we did those. On Saturday, we went off down to Brighton, where we met with Pete Bark and talked about the latest Organite trials.
Yes.
And a conspiracy involving the Gatso speed cameras that they use there in the
UK. Yeah, the Gatso ones, yes.
So that's really fun. Magician Paul Zenon interviewed in a church graveyard.
That's good.
He was debunking the concept of psychics and the paranormal as magic acts and revealing how their tricks are done.
Much like the psychic faith healers of the Philippines.
We interviewed Caroline Knight of the National Health Federation.
Good God.
We discussed more business as usual when it comes to our health, nutrition, and care.
How many people did you go through?
I'm listing all of them, dude. We have time here. Sunday, May 6th, we canceled our trip to France.
Oh,
we were
going
to go to La Coupole, but it just became clear that because of the logistical nightmare that was the UK bank holiday, how does this always bite us on the ass?
Yeah, I know, always. Every time we go over, there's a bank holiday.
And the costs
of the channel
caused
tournament
by the French elections. Socialists got elected, and overnight the cost to go through the tunnel one way went from £25 to £100. So round trip through the tunnel was like $360.
Holy.
For the 3 hours we were going to spend at La Coupole, imagine my anger if that turned out not to be enough time.
Yeah, really.
That Plus, there's some other ancient sites. I don't know if you're aware of this, but northern France has some history. So,
yes.
So thought maybe we save this for another.
Okay,
another
very good. Time. Yes.
So we stuck around, and I learned that Brighton is the most amazing city in the world for cats.
For cats? The musical?
No, not the musical. I mean, every house that I looked in had the most extraordinary cat.
Ooh,
in like, their window.
Really?
Yeah.
You just walked
around? It was
around.
Spooky. And they were all watching me.
And you were watching them. The fact that you were noticing
them. I was watching them watching me.
That's all creeping me out.
We interviewed Dr. David Bramwell about utopian civilizations,
mm-hmm.
including Scotland's Findhorn,
oh, yes.
and a contemporary society in Europe that has supposedly mastered time travel.
What?
Interesting stuff.
Are we going to that? I want to go to that to film that.
Shot many oddities in Brighton, returned to London for a few hours to shoot footage for our story about Edmund Kean's sword.
Yes.
That we talked about on a recent
show. Can't wait for that. Did you find the Garrick's Theater?
No, it was the Lyceum Theater. I wasn't looking for Garrick's. I was looking for where Henry Irving and Bram Stoker wrote Dracula
for
him. Finally got to spend a few hours at Sci-Fi London hanging out with our friends Chris Patmore and Shahzad and Ket and Fia and...
Fia the saw player?
No.
What was her name?
That's Sara.
Sara the saw player.
And...
I got them mixed up.
And in fact, courtesy of Sara, I was able to have my live event of the week.
The Chilpack Hollywood live event of the week.
I attended a screening of this, the most amazing silent film. I think it's from 1925 or 1926.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Prince Ahmed.
Oh, yeah.
And The Adventures of Prince Ahmed by Lottie Renegar, 1926. And it was accompanied by the Saw Orchestra.
Really?
Yeah, the Saw Orchestra. And the audience had to pick up a percussion and rain instruments and all this and had to play along.
Play along as well.
So we were all accompanying the movie. And this movie is so cool, the animation. It's a sci-fi animated film from 1926.
No way.
The Adventures of Prince Ahmed.
Directed by...
so great. Lottie Renegar.
Right, not Jean Renoir. It wasn't one of the dadaist films of the 1920s.
So, lightning round here.
Yes.
Went back to Brighton on Monday, mm-hmm. interviewed Dr. Jonathan Hare, mm-hmm. physicist and TV presenter, about ancient forms of harnessing energy.
Right.
And the current business, as usual, that exists in academia and in scientific research.
Oh, like Dr. Tiller.
Also interviewed Mark Bennett himself
about
his latest explorations.
Mm-hmm.
Including some very interesting explorations he conducted at Port Marion, where The Prisoner was
filmed. He was over there, was he?
And then on Tuesday, the 8th of May, met one of my fellow presenters on Siren FM and on the Midweek Drive, Richard Fitzwilliams,
okay.
who is a film critic, is the royal historian, and who was the editor of the International Who's Who. For 25 years or more.
Wow.
And he gave me a private tour of the Royal Family Portraiture Gallery at the Mall Galleries.
It's the Mall, yes, at Pall Mall.
It was
How did he get in on that?
Well, he does all their publicity. He's the Royal Historian.
He's the Royal Historian.
And don't kid yourself, I'm trying to get into the International Who's Who. We hit it off like gangbusters. He's such a fascinating, so much fun. I can only sum it up with what Lily said, because she's heard him on the radio as well.
Right.
She said, I would pay good money to hang out with that guy. And it was a delight. And from there, ran off for a series of more interviews, including two people that I know Lyle would love to have met, Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince, who have authored such books as The Stargate Conspiracy,
oh, yes.
which is one of his favorites, Templar Revelation.
Oh, yeah.
And they're thanked in the movie version of The Da Vinci Code with a cameo. They got to act in the movie as a thank you for really revealing all this hidden knowledge about the Magdalene.
Right.
Again, the emergence of Mary Magdalene, throughout the ages. From there, we went to Simon Drake's House of Magic.
Ah, of course.
It's, if the Magic Castle here in L.A. was a hidden location.
Right. That would,
you know,
be
it's
Simon
an underground
Drake.
Club. That yeah, would be yeah. Simon Drake's House of Magic.
I've this, only heard of it.
He is so great. He's a big admirer of yours.
Is he really?
He really is. And had wonderful things to say. And he was fantastic. He talked both about business as usual mm-hmm. and kind of about the sleight of hand that companies will do.
Yeah.
But also, unlike our other magician interview, he's someone who really does embrace, among other things, the concept of shamanism. And
yeah.
that this is a magic, as it's, you know, practiced, is a doorway to opening to a greater sense of wonder that there are mysteries out there
right.
in the world worth exploring.
Yeah.
Not as a way of debunking them.
Right.
So it was a fascinating counterpoint. And then we interviewed author and filmmaker Mark Pilkington, who co-wrote the book and co-directed the film The Mirage Men, which purports that almost all UFO activity has been completely manufactured by the Mirage Men, government agents who are disinformation agents to some end.
Right.
Not quite clear on what end it is.
Right, but for some reason.
And so that was his theory, and we'll have some of that.
Fantastic.
And my last interview right before getting on a plane was with
the pilot,
Karen Davies, about the assemblage point, and also about handwriting.
Of course.
So some healing,
some
art of handwriting analysis, and my trip tour was over.
Wow, fantastic.
I did a lot of work.
You do a lot of work.
We have quite a head start on Truth is Out There. I would say we're about a fifth of the way through Truth is Out There 2 and 3 at this
fantastic.
Point in terms of shooting.
And speaking of head starts, my Kickstart campaign comes down to the final 10 days.
Yes.
And we are just a mere 1,500 away. From look at that.
Less than that. 1,300 and change.
So we are very close to achieving our goal. We just need that last push. So
you know there's someone laying in wait who,
I know.
If it doesn't finish, is going to come in.
Come in with a grand.
So there's more than a week left.
Yes.
We'll check in on this again next Monday. But again, people can go to Kickstarter, can plug in Dean Hagland or Shock and Awesome and find out about the graphic novel you're going to make.
That's right. It's going to be fantastic. And remember, any pledge level gets you original artwork. Where else do you find that on Kickstarter? Normally original
it
artwork
is some really interesting pledge level gifts.
Thank you.
Really unique and cool. What have you been reading, Dean Hagland?
I'm still on the Greater Journey, Americans in Paris in the 1830s by
David McCullough.
Is it good? Still, yeah, it's really good. I'm in the medical version now, where they all are in the best medical school was in Paris at the time, and so many doctors traveled from Boston and New York to study there, and that journey was quite extraordinary. So that's what I'm reading.
I'm still working on the Wallace Stevens poetry, and I've begun three books. From a journalist and TV producer, Ian Lennox,
uh-huh.
a thriller set in Tyneside called The 60s Man.
Uh-huh.
Autographed by the author.
Not to brag.
Stephen Jacobs wrote an authorized biography of Boris Karloff called Boris Karloff, More Than a Monster.
Ah, fantastic.
This book is so dense with not only information, but also with pages, that it threatened the whole weight of my luggage coming back.
Oh,
no. It is a
tome.
Big, heavy book. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Nick Cook, who wrote for many years as a journalist within the defense industry, wrote a book called The Hunt for the Zero Point,
yes.
which I've just begun reading.
I see it there.
And that is fascinating.
Fascinating.
We only have a little bit of time left,
yes.
but I want to find out. I saw many, many movies, which we'll discuss
yes.
next time.
I saw.
Did you see The Elephant in the Room? The Elephant and Castle in the Room. Yeah. Did you see The Avengers?
I have not seen The Avengers. I was too busy in front
you
of the cameras.
You are the one.
I know. I am
see,
the
it
only
was
one.
Playing in the UK while I was there,
right.
where it's called Avengers Assemble.
Right.
Which is a better title.
I think way better title.
And they did it so as not to be confused with The Avengers.
The TV series.
or the Ralph Fiennes, Sean Connery, Uma Thurman adaptation of
Disaster.
The TV series.
Yeah, God forbid.
I did see it, so we'll talk about it perhaps next week. You'll have seen it by then.
I will have seen it by then.
But this thing, you know, $100 million in its second weekend.
Yeah.
No film had ever done that. No film had ever made $200 million in its first domestic weekend.
Right.
This did it. No film had ever made $100 million. Only a handful of films had made $100 million in any weekend.
I know.
And this did it in its second weekend.
That's word of mouth.
There's so many ways to, you know, it's already the 11th most successful film worldwide of all time, having passed The Dark Knight. But these things are not, as we know, adjusted
To
for
inflation,
ticket price,
3D.
The way people see movies, all this sort of stuff. So as I always say, you compare it against the field. Really,
right.
Number two film was the ill-advised Dark Shadows.
Really. Yes.
Yeah. Now, people are saying that it was a hugely disappointing opening, making $28.8 million. It's hugely disappointing if you compare it to other Tim Burton, Johnny Depp films. But I think it's kind of proof of how popular they are that it made $28.8 million, because does that project, especially, because that does have a cult following, but especially
tiny.
A parody of it,
yes,
hold any innate appeal for anyone? The people who love Dark Shadows aren't going to love a parody of it.
No, they're going to hate it.
And
the people who don't know it aren't going to care Dark Shadows as a market
thing. So they're going just because of Johnny Depp and Tim Burton on a weekend where...
They couldn't get into Avengers.
I think where because they like them. I think it actually, all this thing saying that it's a really disappointing opening, you know, it's only disappointing in the sense that maybe they thought they had counter-programming because they had a comedy to go to, which is usually good counter-programming opposite a blockbuster.
Right.
But the Avengers is really...
Huge.
A very, very funny comedy.
Right.
It is a comedy. It is also an action film. It is also a superhero movie. You know, it is not only a four-quadrant success in terms of its audience base, but also in terms of the different
tones
that it achieves.
Right.
So in that sense, maybe, yes, it was disappointing because they thought they were going to have the comedy slate all to themselves.
Wow.
But to talk about the Avengers' success and to wrap one's mind around this, to me... When the film in its second weekend, you could take any one of the 3 days that weekend, and that day alone, it made more money than the number two film at the box office did all weekend. I'm sorry, you're right. That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
How about you take any one of those 3 days of the weekend, and the Avengers made more money, let's say on Friday, where it made $29 million. It made more money on Friday than the number 3 through 100 films at the box office made collectively all weekend long.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's playing pretty well against the field.
Yes, it certainly is. Well, till next week, we'll
talk
about
the
field.
And that's how we do it, because we don't compete with anyone else.
We don't. We are alone.
We're the opposite of playing against the field. We compete with ourselves.
Because we're our own field.
In year six, the best Chill Pack Hollywood Hour we possibly can.
You can find us everywhere on the internet at chillpackhollywood.com, spelled C-H-I-L-L-P-A-K, Hollywood.com.
Fascinating how quickly you forgot how to spell Chill Pack.
Yeah, I know. It's out of my head.
Well, you can download them, stream them. You can subscribe there via RSS or iTunes.
Yes. You can see us on MySpace still? Are you doing
blog? Yeah, MySpace. We do the blog, myspace.com/chillpackhollywood.
We're Facebook. Facebook.
Like us, facebook.com/chillpackhollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Follow us on Twitter.
I'm at D. Haglin.
I'm at Phil Lernis. And write us.
Yes, please
chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. We do have messages and letters and notes from people that we want to address, and we'll get to that next week.
Excellent. Till then, I'm Dean Haglin.
I'm Phil Lernis.
See ya.
Belated spoiler alert.